But we want to get into the process. Heidi, can you tell us what we've got?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. There are two legislative council drafts in the packet of materials we handed out to you. The first is LC-3511 relating to unlawful trade practices. It would exclude from the unlawful trade practices law acts by publishers of telephone directories and publication or dissemination of advertisement if publisher did not have knowledge of false, misleading, or deceptive character of advertisement. The second is LC-3538. It would create a crime of unlawfully being in a location where children regularly congregate and creates a crime of unlawful contact with child. This bill would penalize predatory sex offenders, sexually violent dangerous offenders, and dangerous offenders if their underlying conviction was a sex felony from being frequenting places where children are likely to be.
Committee, why we're doing it this way, please?
Yes. You, committee members, you may recall that last week we sent down these draft requests, and so now these are just going to be Judiciary Committee bills, assuming everyone agrees to send them through as Judiciary Committee bills.
And after the 50 days, the Speaker of the House has to give us the authorization.
Correct, and she did do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Like to have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that LCs 3511 and 3538 be introduced as committee bills.
Representative McPherson has moved that the LC drafts 3538 and 3511 be put into the committee as committee bills. Any objections? Not so ordered. We've got about, 10 or 11 of these today?
Yes, sir.
We've got 15 or 14. So we're going to have, we got just about an hour. We'll see how much people want to talk. Okay, we're going to a work session on House Bill 2142.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2142 would specify circumstances under which the corrections officers or other officials employed by the Department of Corrections can use deadly physical force. It does declare an emergency. We did adopt the Dash 1 amendments in the subcommittee on April 14th. Those specifically list out the situations when deadly physical force cannot be used, and those are primarily when it's a minimum security facility, either co-located with a regular security facility or standalone minimum security facilities. It further goes on to state that when an individual during transport or other supervised activity, if the inmate is classified as minimum custody and is not being transported or supervised with inmates who are medium or higher custody, in any of those situations, that this would clarify that deadly physical force cannot be used to prevent an escape.
And we took the dash ones in sub, right?
Correct. So this is before you as amended to be sent to the floor, if you so vote.
I have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move we House Bill 2142-1 to the floor with the due pass.
As amended. Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2142 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Barker? Aye. Representative Flores? Aye. Representative Thatcher? Aye. Representative Wirth? Aye. Vice Chair McPherson? Aye. Vice Chair Olson? Aye. Chair Krieger? Aye. House Bill 2142 is moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Barker, will you carry, please?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Open work session on House Bill 2050.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2050 is before you, having been heard on April 14th by the Criminal Subcommittee. The Dash 2 amendments were adopted at that time. This bill would require, as a condition of probation, parole, or post-prison supervision, that adult defendants convicted of certain sex crimes listed in the bill, as well as the most serious assault crimes, could not reside within 3 miles of the victim of the crime if that victim is under 18 and if the victim either in person, in writing, or through a representative asks the court or the community corrections to impose that condition.
Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2050 to the floor with the due pass. With the, I guess I should move the amendments. We did the amendments, right?
Yeah.
Okay. House Bill 2050 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Rosa Barker has moved House Bill 2050 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Garg.
Mr. Chair, the SMS says requires as a condition of probation, parole, or post-prison supervision that certain persons reside within 3 miles of victim of crime. I'm getting the idea that it's exactly opposite of that.
You know, that is an excellent point, and you are correct. I must have left a word out, but you are correct. It's that they cannot reside within 3 miles of a victim of a crime, and I will make sure that that is changed on my final SMS. Thank you, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Isn't it wonderful that people are actually reading things? Have a vote on the bill.
Representative Ratcliffe?
Aye.
Representative
Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores? Aye. Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative
Worth? Aye.
Vice Chairman
Person?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair
Aye. House Bill 2050 is amended. I move to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And Representative Barker, you're the carrier again.
Thank you.
And we'll open a work session on House Bill 2444.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2444 comes to you from your criminal subcommittee. We had hearings on March 1st and then a work session on April 19th. This would authorize a circuit court to place a probationer under the direct supervision of the court. This is commonly done, and it's called bench probation. However, there isn't really a statutory authority for it, and the courts are asking us to go ahead and create that statutory authority. It imposes a supervision fee of $50 for every 6 months of probation ordered or fraction thereof, and then appropriates that money to pay the costs incurred by the courts in supervising the probationers. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the Dash 2 amendments were adopted. The Dash 2 amendments were adopted by the committee, and that just defined bench probation and set that supervision fee that I mentioned earlier.
Okay. Have a motion on the bill,
Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2444 as amended, or excuse me, adopt Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2444.
As they're already in it, so just
oh, they were okay. I'm sorry about that. Then I move that we take to House Bill 2444 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher has moved House Bill 2444 as amended to the floor with a due pass, and there'll be a referral to Ways and Means. Any questions? Call the roll.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 2444 is moved to the floor with a referral to the Ways and Means. Bill 2892.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2892 is before us from the Criminal Subcommittee. It is expanding the authority of Port of Portland police peace officers. It adds them to the definition of peace officer in certain statutes. We heard in the Criminal Subcommittee that although there exists an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau officers and the Port of Portland officers, that gives the Port of Portland officers the authority to arrest, sort of as deputies of the Portland Police Bureau, that they occasionally are challenged in court as not having the authority to perform acts as peace officers off of Port of Portland property. This bill essentially codifies that intergovernmental agreement and gives them the authority without requiring that agreement. We did hear about one specific case where a deputy district attorney who did not know about the intergovernmental agreement and a new officer who did not know about the intergovernmental agreement were unable to explain that to the court, and a criminal case was dismissed in Multnomah County. So this obviously is partially in response to that and wants to avoid that in the future.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I received a letter dated April 14th yesterday afternoon, and it's from Portland Police Chief Derek Foxworth, and he's in support of this bill.
Okay. And we had adopted the dash twos.
There are no amendments.
No amendments. Then the dash ones, we didn't do that. All right.
No. Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Volson.
I'd make a motion then to move House Bill 2892 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson has moved House Bill 2892 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Werder?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2892 has moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And Representative Olson, will be the carrier, please. Open work session on House Bill 2902.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2902 was before the Criminal Subcommittee on April 14th. It was passed to you with a due pass recommendation. There are no amendments on this bill, and it would direct that 3% of fines collected as the result of citations issued by parking enforcement volunteers be used to maintain that volunteer parking enforcement program. We heard testimony from individuals who are part of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. They have been working in partnership with local law enforcement agencies to cite vehicles without permits parked in handicapped parking spaces. This was a program that I think everyone really enjoyed, law enforcement and the volunteers, but in these times of budget crunches, things like cameras, film, hats, and jackets were no longer affordable for the law enforcement agencies, and some of those programs started to get cut because of that. So we are just taking 3% of those fines, funneling that to the Volunteer Parking Enforcement Program for their supplies.
So, Mr. Chair, I would make motion to move House Bill 2902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson has moved.
I am sorry. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Sorry.
We'll have moved House Bill 2902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a referral to Ways and Means. Any objections, discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just had a question. Was there any discussion of the amount that 3% would represent?
We did receive in written testimony some estimates, Representative Flores, and in 2004 in the Portland area, a total of 1,023 citations were issued, resulting in 386,770 citation dollars. So that 3% would work out to be $11,603. The Gresham area, 266 citations for $99,190 in citation dollars, 3% of which is $2,975.
Mr. Chair, was there any opposition to this bill in the subcommittee?
Representative Gerard, there was no opposition.
Opposition.
If I may, Mr. Chair, these are the volunteers who see the wheelchairs that enforce the parking.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion? Okay. Call the vote, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Patrick?
Aye.
Representative Werder?
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 2902 moves to the floor with a due pass and recommendation with the referral Ways and Means. Open the work session on House Bill 2283.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee.
House Bill 2283 is a bill that was filed to request of the administrative section of the Oregon State Bar. I was heard in the Civil Subcommittee February 2nd and again on April 18th, where it adopted the Dash 5 amendments and moved it out unanimously. It prohibits agencies from requiring licensees to take mental or physical examinations unless the agency has adopted rules ensuring timely, cost-effective exams performed by an impartial professional. It also provides that the licensee with the right to a contested case hearing to challenge the order requiring the examination. It limits the issues that may be decided in those hearings to whether there is substantial evidence to support the agency's requirement for the examination. Currently, the process for challenging one of these physical or mental examinations is to apply to the circuit court for an appeal there. This would make that appeal a contested case hearing. I have not received a fiscal impact statement from LFO at this time, but I did receive the facts from the agencies indicating there would be a fiscal for the 2005-2007 biennium of around $250,000. And that's all I have on this one.
That came from the agencies, not LFO, or was it two?
That's a fax I received from the agencies. I have not received an official impact statement yet from LFO.
Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Ackerman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move that House Bill 2283 as amended be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 2283 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Representative Ackerman.
With respect to counsel's comments, and they are correct, but let me just put it this way. Under current law, an order for an examination can be entered anyway, and although under current law, the appeal would be to circuit court and then to the Court of Appeals, this bill provides for the entry of an order pursuant to a hearing and a direct appeal to the circuit to the Court of Appeals, thereby eliminating one leg of the appellate process. And there was undisputed testimony on that point pursuant to my questioning to the Department of Justice representative. The so-called fiscal, which is coming up today, was not a part of the hearing process, and it comes from the agencies involved, and I think that it is duplicative because they already face appeals on existing orders for examinations, as I indicated. I think the fiscal should be substantially less because, as I have said, this bill does eliminate one step in the appellate process in determining the validity of these orders. This bill had the support of the administrative law section of the Oregon State Bar. The DOJ was neutral, and I think the agencies have overreacted to this particular bill. So with that in mind, I think all of these matters were covered. I am terribly suspicious about the fiscal being presented by the agencies at this late date, not giving us any time at all to rebut that or get into the merits of that proposal during the hearings process, which I think was quite laborious, and I think we had two or three hearings on this before the subcommittee, and we tried to get the people together to resolve their differences as best we could. But I therefore reject any contention at this time that this has any substantial fiscal impact.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to have seen a fiscal impact. If they're going to do it, be part of the discussion, and they didn't bring it forward, so we'll wait for LFO downstairs to tell us what the facts are. Any further discussions? Okay, you've made the motion.
I've made the motion.
Roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker? Aye. Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrari? Aye. Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 2283 passes to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation, and Representative Ackerman, you will be the carrier.
Thank you.
open a work session on House Bill 2306.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2306 comes to you from the Civil Subcommittee. What was heard on February 14th originally and then passed out on April 18th with dash 4 amendments, which you have before you. Essentially, this bill makes unmarried parents liable for the expenses of their children. Currently, married parents are liable for the expenses of their children under ORS 108-040, and this bill mirrors that statute for unmarried parents. There were some issues that came up in subcommittee regarding the liability for grandparents, and so that is partially what the dash 4 amendments address, to ensure that parents would not be liable for the expenses of their grandchildren. One other thing that this bill does, it is slightly confusing, is makes parents liable for expenses of minor children who have been deemed in the majority because they have been married. Right now, if a minor child is married, they're deemed for other intents and purposes to be of the majority. This bill would say that for purposes of liability of their parents, they're still deemed to be minors. And so those parents would still be liable for the expenses of the children. And
that's it?
That's all.
Okay. Any discussion on the bill?
I just have a question. If somebody's married, then their parents are still responsible for them if they're not 18? Financially responsible?
Yes, they would be responsible for the expenses incurred. For instance, if a parent took that married child to the hospital and signed for their hospital expenses, the other parent could then be held liable if that child was married.
What if the 17-year-old that gets married and goes out and buys a car and then quits paying?
It would have to be an expense of the child by one of the parents. So I don't believe that.
But you have to if they co-signed or something like that.
Yeah, I don't believe in that situation that a parent would be liable for those type of expenses.
Okay. Thank you.
You have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I was the one who brought up the concern about the grandparents' liability, and I feel that the amendments satisfy my concerns.
They had a concern for me, being as I'm helping raise a couple, so.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2306A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrard has moved House Bill 2306A. I believe it's as amended, right?
Yes.
As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further questions? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2306 as amended is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who was the carrier in the sub? You were? Want to carry it in the floor, please? Open the work session on House Bill 2416.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2416 was originally heard on February 16th by the Civil Subcommittee and passed out on April 18th, and it adopted the Dash 1 amendments. That bill and the Dash 1 amendments extend the cause of action for physical or financial abuse to financially incapable persons and persons with disability. Right now, ORS 124-100 provides a cause of action for financial or physical abuse to either elderly persons or incapacitated persons. That cause of action provides for treble damages and recovery of attorney's fees. The purpose for that statute is to protect vulnerable persons, and this bill would expand the scope of what vulnerable persons would be to include the financially incapable persons and persons with disabilities. There was some concern when this bill was heard in the Civil Subcommittee about the definition and the scope of the persons with disabilities. The dash one amendments address that issue by defining the scope of a person with a disability and then limiting what persons with disability can bring suit for this cause of action. If you look at lines 10 through 12 of the dash one amendments, only persons with disabilities who are susceptible to force, threat, duress, coercion, persuasion, or physical or emotional injury because of that person's physical or mental impairment can bring suit under this statute.
Any other discussion on the bill? Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2416 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 2416 and has amended the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? If not, call the roll.
Representative Barker. Aye. Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Garrard. Aye. Representative Gorer. Aye. Representative Butcher. Aye. Representative Gorer. Aye. Vice Chairman Kirsten. Aye. Vice Chair Olson. Aye. Chair Sigmund. Aye. House Bill 2416 has been moved to the floor. Mr. Chair, we need a carrier on that bill. Mm-hmm. Do you represent Flores? Right. So, request that Representative Hosby a co-carrier.
Can.
Thank you.
Have him as the co-carrier. It has been moved to the floor as amended with a due pass. Open a work session on House Bill 2518.
Did you say 2518?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2518 was originally heard in the Civil Subcommittee on February 23rd, passed out on April 18th with the dash two amendments. It's a relatively simple bill. It allows a Public Safety Memorial Fund Board, if the applicant requests or shows good cause, to extend the 30-day time limit that the applicant has to either request reconsideration of an order issued by the board or for the board to notify the applicant of its decision on reconsideration. This bill came about because there was an individual who went through this process, and because of the strict time limits, the board was not able to issue this order at a convenient time for the applicant. The purpose for this bill was to allow applicants, if they to bring forward this request, to allow the board to extend this timeline. The dash two amendments are drafted in such a way to ensure that the board is not bringing these requests on its own motion so that it can extend these timelines, but to allow applicants that flexibility to do so if they can show good cause.
Motion on the bill. Representative Gerard.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2518 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard has moved House Bill 2518 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Barker. Aye. Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Gorer. Aye. Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Ward. Aye. Vice Chairman Kirsten. Aye. Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Krieger.
Aye. And I'll assign a carrier in a minute here. House Bill 2518 has been moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Reverend Gorer, you had it in the sub.
Correct.
I'm going to go ahead and let you and Representative Greenlick co-carry it.
Fine, Mr. Chair.
We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2545.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2545 was before this full committee on April 1st and was pulled so that further amendments could be drafted to clarify some language that wasn't appropriate in the dash two amendments. House Bill 2545 prohibits a public body from charging a record request or attorney's fees that are related to the determination of the application of the provisions of the public records laws. It authorizes the public body to recover costs of attorney's fees for the time spent for the attorney's time spent reviewing the public records, redacting the public records, or segregating public records into exempt and non-exempt records. It also requires that public bodies provide cost estimates to requesters before producing the records if the fee is in excess of $25.
A motion on the bill? Representative Ackerman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 2545, we have to do the dash, are the amendments in, Council?
The amendments came in.
They're in. They are in. Okay, thank you. Then I move that House Bill 2545, as amended, be forwarded to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 2545 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative
Flores? Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher? Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair
McPherson? Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2545 has been moved to the floor as amended with a due pass. Representative Ackerman, you want to be the carrier?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Opening work session on House Bill 2839.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2839 was originally heard in the Civil Subcommittee on March 30th. It imposes personal liability on employees of the Department of Human Services who intentionally falsify reports, willfully misrepresent truth, or intentionally misuse their position of trust or power of employment. What this bill does is makes an exception to the general rule that public employees cannot be sued individually, but under the Oregon Tort Claims Act, the public body must be sued. The Oregon Tort Claims Act allows suits against public bodies, and it provides for notice requirements and other certain limitations on the damages that can be recovered. This bill, as I said, provides an exception to the Oregon Tort Claims Act, specifically for employees, DHS employees who are directly responsible for the care or placement of children. Those individual lawsuits would not be subject to either the notice requirements under the Oregon Tort Claims Act or the limited liability that is under that act. However, there is a higher standard that the plaintiff must show that is clear and convincing evidence to bring these suits as opposed to preponderance of the evidence.
Okay, any discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I do have some thoughts I wanted to share. I've kind of wrestled with this one because I sat in on the civil subcommittee when it was hearing this testimony on this bill, and I know there's a problem we're trying to solve here. I mean, the problem is that there has been a pattern within DHS some, and I'm sure it's just a very small minority of our caseworkers who have acted in a high-handed and perhaps arrogant manner at times. And I think the question is, what's the way to get at that situation? And the idea of creating personal liability for the caseworker just seems to me like a difficult way to get at the problem. Many of the people who do this work don't have significant assets. If they don't carry a homeowner's insurance with general liability coverage, there really isn't going to be any place to go to get at them. And the people who are probably the worst offenders probably are judgment-proof, as we say in the legal trade. It seems to me that it's internal activities within or appropriate supervisory conduct within the agency that's going to bring about the kind of cultural change we need to rein in these actors rather than imposing or creating a personal liability that then becomes, I think, a chilling kind of effect for a lot of, you know, good and earnest caseworkers who are undertaking very difficult work. And there's no question but what doing work related to the families is highly charged emotionally, and that it's going to tend to stir up a lot of conflict just by its very nature. So I have to say I'm concerned about the bill, and I'd appreciate hearing any thoughts that other members of the committee might have about it.
Representative Ackerman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also had some reservations about the bill. I think they started from the public hearings that we had. And to my recollection, we did not have union representatives to come in to testify to give them give us their perspective on this. I didn't see any agency people come forward and give us a read on this bill, and I sort of felt that there was a vacuum. So for you agency heads and you union members, union leaders out there in TV land, I think that the bill gained a lot of momentum, which maybe it should not have had, simply because of their failure to participate in the public hearing process. And I'm very, very worried about that. Uh-huh. On the other hand, I agree with Representative McPherson and have and share his ideas that perhaps this is somewhat off target. I note particularly that these acts that would provide an action against a probably a judgment-proof employee are the same types of acts that could be brought under the Tort Claims Act against the agency. So I believe that there's still a remedy. In all the testimony we heard, and we heard a lot of emotional testimony from people that had unsatisfactory experiences with DHR, none of them, to my knowledge, had ever filed any claim under the Tort Claims Act for the grievances that they alleged. So I have to sort of conclude that maybe they didn't have cases, or maybe their cases were barred by some timeline. I think if there's a problem within DHR, that we should give them an opportunity to deal with it rather than employ punitive measures against their employees. I believe that the people that claim to be victims of DHS activity still have a good claim under the Tort Claims Act, and I would rather let it be there for a while and maybe let the next legislative session, you know, review this type of problem.
I would only comment that I contacted Mrs. Foley my first session regarding problems that I had personally experienced in my family, and I've had numerous, over six constituents who've had similar type issues, and this has been ongoing, and the agency, though they've been given somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 years, has made little progress. I met with them also regarding this bill with Representative Richardson, and they are trying to make some progress. We have moved it to a higher standard of proof. I think unless we move, it will continue. And you heard earlier the bill we passed out that earlier had to do with the employees and things of this nature of Department of Human Resources. I don't think it's going to be handled. It's been ongoing. To me, it's something that needs to be addressed by us because they can't do it internally.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just, you know, kind of compare this, if this law was being imposed on the police department, which I'm familiar with, and when we had people who were being sued, they get close scrutiny to see if they're doing their job or not under that, as the police bureau ends up indemnifying them, although I know of cases where officers did have to pay out of their own pocket on some punitive damage cases. And there was a time in Dallas, Texas, where somebody had interpreted a law about arresting somebody and how you couldn't do it unless a sergeant appeared, and what the immediate advice came down was, do not arrest anybody. You're just putting yourself at making yourself liable for no good purpose. If that's the way the government wants to handle it, let them go. And that, my great concern would be this would, to if I'm a DHS employee and there's, it's a hotly contested thing, I may just say, well, why am I going to stick my neck out? And, you know, yeah, the kid needs to be removed, but I'm not going to take that chance. And I'm afraid this would have such a detrimental effect on the good employees that what we're trying to cure would just, we would, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater in this one. And we do need to be after DHS to really closely scrutinize, and I don't know just how we do that, but I don't think this would be the solution. I don't think we would get the results we really are looking for here.
Okay, any other discussion, Representative Girard?
In my district and during the interim period of time, I would suspect that almost 50% of the telephone calls that I get involve children and families in DHS services. We punish and imprison those in our society who abuse children and families. And yet, there are a minute number of DHS employees who are doing just that with no accountability. This law this bill would change that. So I support 2839.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to bring up that there was some testimony submitted after the fact to our committee administrators, so by these SEIU, so there was some information from them. But I agree with the Chair. This is a difficult subject, and it's personally frightening what could happen if you're on the wrong side of one of these situations. So, but I also agree with my colleagues. It seems like it's a problem that maybe this is not the most effective or appropriate way of fixing the problem. And while there's no excuse for blanket excuse for all these DHS caseworkers, I also know I certainly wouldn't want to be one of them in these restrained resources and given the amount of demand that there is increasingly in our society. So I still believe that at this time the most appropriate claim is against the public body, and so I'll be opposing this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it is good to note that this is focused on those employees within the Department of Human Services who intentionally falsify reports, willfully misrepresent the truth, or intentionally misuse their position of trust or power of employment. There is a significant problem with a heavy-handedness, I think, in a lot of our agencies, and a lot of the calls I get as well deal with that specific issue. And if the purpose is to draw attention to those specific categories of folks, then perhaps it is time for a culture shock. And further, that those who are good employees, and I have spoken with some who are concerned about this, who are good employees, may well feel that they are being backed up so that those who are not good employees and fall into these categories will be facing some significant consequences. And if it's a deterrent to those types of intentional falsifications and misrepresentations and abuse of power, then this is a good thing.
And we heard some pretty good testimony as how that was happening, how they were intimidating people. And if you argued with them or didn't agree with them, then they became vindictive. And this gets to a very fine, narrow group of people. And when I talked to Mrs. Foley, she says she doesn't want to have these kind of people there anyway. So maybe we're going to be doing the agency a favor.
Mr. Chair, I have a question I wanted to ask of counsel, just something that Representative Flores said just triggered his thought. What's the duty of the agency to defend an employee who is the subject of a lawsuit under this statute if... Let's say an employee is doing just the right thing, and yet because of this emotionally charged environment they're operating in, the parent who is unhappy files a lawsuit personally against the employee alleging that these standards have been met. Who handles the defense of that claim?
It would be my understanding from the bill, and this is something I could look into further, but it would be my understanding that the individual employee would be liable to cover the defense of that claim if it's not brought under the Oregon Tort Claims Act.
Further? Have a motion on the bill? Representative Garrard?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2839 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Garrard has moved House Bill 2839 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussions? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
No.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Orr?
No.
Vice Chair McPherson?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
I'm going to vote no.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. The motion bill doesn't pass. Have a work session on House Bill 3159.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 3159 comes to you from the Civil Subcommittee. It was originally heard there April 4th and passed out on April 18th, where it adopted the -3 amendments. I'm hesitating because I can't remember if we adopted these or if we were going to wait to adopt them here.
No, these were. I see they were adopted on 318 or 418, according to my notes.
Okay, they were. I'm sorry about that. House Bill 3159, with the dash three amendments, exempts certain contractors from product liability civil actions brought for damages related to asbestos. The purpose of this bill was to exempt contractors who, as long as 40 or 50 years ago, installed products that contained asbestos when that was their only part of the job. In other words, they weren't manufacturing or distributing the asbestos. They were just part of that project, installing those pieces of equipment or those products containing asbestos. So this bill would exempt those contractors, exempt plaintiffs from bringing suit against those contractors. It's my understanding that those individuals are now being brought, or companies are now being brought into those lawsuits, and there generally is not a lawsuit, or there isn't a lawsuit against them anyway, but they have to defend or spend money or expenditures getting out of that lawsuit. This bill would stop plaintiffs from bringing those contractors into the lawsuit in the first place.
Representative Ackerman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 3159 as amended be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
That did have an amendment?
As amended.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 3159 as amended before with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just because I'm a licensed contractor, I wanted to state a potential conflict, though I've never installed asbestos in my life.
Okay, thank you.
All the roll, likely please. Story.
That's what they all say.
Never say never.
I'm sorry.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrari?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson? Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 3159 is amended to move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Ackerman, are you the carrier?
I'll take it. Thank you. Okay.
Open a work session on House Bill 3318.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 3318 was heard in the Civil Subcommittee on April 4th and passed out on the 18th without amendments. It's a relatively simple bill. It increases the amount employers may pay for medical services in non-disabling claims from $500 to $1,500. The purpose of allowing employers to pay personally for these non-disabling claims is so that these claims are not included on their experience rating calculation, which is used to determine the workers' compensation premium for the employer. So the employer has a choice right now to pay for non-disabling claims, which are claims that do not stop an employer from working, so they would be relatively minor claims. The original bill was passed in 1980, and this is just a bill to adjust for inflation, increasing that amount to $1,500.
Discussion on the bill? A motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, only because I am an employer, I do have a potential conflict in this bill as well.
Okay. Representative Ackerman?
Thank you. I move that House Bill 3318 be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 3318 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Beckman?
Aye.
Representative
Barker? Aye.
Representative
Ferrari?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative
Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 3318 passes the floor. With a due pass recommendation.
Representative
Ackerman, you
want to
carry?
I do.
Thank you. And I don't think we have anything else to do. Do our adjournment.